uncle was born in America.
Oh, really?
But he was one of the lucky ones. He managed to escape in a balloon during the Jimmy Carter presidency.
Catapulted propaganda.
The truth is out there.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to The Bunker.
It is May the 12th of 2006, and while Prophecy Month does, in fact, continue here in The Bunker, we have bumped Tom Horn.
No!
Yes.
Actually, we put him so that he can be 3 days in a row consecutively without having to have a weekend break.
That's exactly right, because the interview with Tom is going to literally blow your mind, so make sure you're wearing a hat when you listen, so that at least the pieces will be contained and can be reassembled fairly simply.
And I think it's shiny side in.
Shiny side in when you put the foil around your head. No, seriously, the interview is such that we really didn't want to put a two-day gap in between parts one and then two and three. So that's part of the reason. The other part is that we've got some long-form stories to relate tonight that really wouldn't have fit if we had included the first part of the interview. At least not unless we decide to go to a two-hour show, which we haven't yet decided to do. We do like to have somewhat of a life down here in the bunker. So we've got a few things that we'll cover in more detail tonight, and then we'll begin with the three-part interview with Tom Horn starting Monday night.
And this weekend we're going to be interviewing Beth Vey on Saturday, and on Sunday we're going to be talking with David Duncan.
Boy.
So those, I mean, what a weekend we've got coming up, and those interviews will be coming in the next few weeks as part of Prophecy Series, so you don't want to go away.
That's right. It's we calling it Prophecy Month because that sounds neat, but it's Prophecy Month Plus, so it's
the Prophecy Series.
Yes.
The PS.
So we'll continue, and boy, that's going to be some great stuff. Beth Vey will talk about literal stargates and where she identifies the existence of the literal entry to the abyss. And Dave Duncan will talk to us about why 2012 is a scam. Yeah. So we got some interesting stuff to talk about, but boy, things that have been happening in the news this week just warrant a full night of blather.
There are so many things, you know, and we'll just kick this one out there just to get it out of the way. Monday, President Bush is going to speak to the nation about immigration.
I see. Yes, yes. Well,
it's not about inflation.
Yeah.
Actually, he's my understanding is that he's going to talk about the possibility of sending troops to the border.
Well, you know, as a conservative, and I mean a true conservative, not those fake rhinos, Republicans in name only, that we elected by voting for them twice, I'd say it's about time. I mean, he's 6 years into his term almost, and you know, this is something that his constituency out here in red state America really wanted him to address from the first day.
I know that. And I have to say that there's a part of me that thinks, great, put him down there. We should have been protecting our borders all along. Isn't that what the National Guard, the Reserve, isn't that why they are here, especially the National Guard? Well, you get into that question, then who's in charge of them?
That is a good question.
Is it the governor of each state, or does the United States have precedence because it's the entire border of Mexico, which involves quite a number of states?
Right. Well, in theory, the governors should be able to control. In theory, the governors are the commanders in chief of their state militia.
In theory. And of course, we posted a story from Northcom.mil not that long ago on WatcherMagazine.com about how with the upcoming hurricane season, Northcom is already planning on putting soldiers on the ground before there's a hurricane on land.
Right. Pre-positioning
troops and supplies, which sounds like a great idea. We have to take a look at the long view. Generally, once boots are on the ground, they don't leave easily.
Right.
So my thinking on the border is, and again, this is probably a worse scenario, but the, you know, I got my hat on. So say you're a soldier down there. You're in charge of watching out for illegal immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know who's legal and who isn't around you? In other words, at what point do you stop watching people crossing the Rio Grande or other border points and start looking at people living in the area?
Well, that's a good question. I'd be honest with you, I hadn't even thought about that, because it seemed to me that putting troops up to guard the border is what the Army, the military, is for.
You'd think so.
Yeah, but we traditionally haven't really needed it, at least not since the days of Blackjack Pershing and Pancho Villa.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because some of the things that have happened along the border over the last year makes you wonder which side the government is on. I'll give you two examples. Number one, the case of the rancher down there, whose name escapes me at the moment, Casey Northcutt.
Yes.
Whose property was awarded to two non-U.S. citizens who were caught by...
Two illegals.
Right. From El Salvador, who were caught.
To whom he'd given milk and cookies.
Yeah. Yeah. They were caught by Minutemen coming across the border, and they were stopped. They were given a blanket. They were given water and cookies while Border Patrol were caught. And then afterward, the Southern Poverty Law Center helped mm-hmm. them file a lawsuit, which they won against Mr. Northcutt. And since he did not have the financial resources to pay the judgment that was levied against him, the judge in the case awarded his ranch in Arizona to these two non-citizens
mm-hmm.
who
yes.
are now being fast-tracked through the citizenship process.
I know. It makes no sense.
So that's case number one. Case number two is a story that was published by the Daily Bulletin in California by Sarah Carter, a reporter who's written on this subject for quite a while now, that the United States government is alerting the Mexican government as to the presence and location of Minuteman patrols along the border. Now, again, which side is the government on?
Mm-hmm.
The critics of the Minutemen accused them of being racists.
Mm-hmm.
And as we talked with Philip and Paul Collins, that is something that the Minutemen need to be very concerned about, because there are people who would like to hijack the Minutemen movement for racist purposes.
Right.
And, there are others who'd like to see that happen just to discredit them. There are also powerful forces that want it to happen so they can provoke a race war between the Minutemen and those who favor the Aztlan movement.
Mm-hmm.
But why the government is tipping off the Mexican government as to where these American citizens are, who are there just to observe and report to Border Patrol,
mm-hmm.
they don't shoot illegals coming across the border. They don't abuse them. At least that's not what they claim to do. And even in the case of Casey Northcutt, the illegals who got his ranch said that they weren't mistreated. So why is the government tipping off the Mexican government?
I don't know. But, you know, the next thing we know, we're going to have the Mexican border is going to be up close to Missouri somewhere. Let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a story, kids. Sit back and relax. Years ago, I had hair past my shoulders. Now, anyone looking at pictures of me now know at the very least I've had short hair for some time, and right now I have extremely short hair, but it used to be past my shoulders. And I've always been, for years, decades, I've been in the habit of trimming my own hair. Well, one morning, I was sitting in front of a mirror trimming my past my shoulder length hair,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't get the sides even. I trimmed one side, up, longer than the other one. Trimmed the other side, up. That one's too short. Trim the other side up. The next thing I knew, folks, I had short hair.
Mm-hmm.
I kept trimming and trimming and trimming, and suddenly I had very short hair. Now, that seems like an odd story to tell, perhaps, but with our border becoming more and more blurred, and with the question of legality, when people come over fed milk and cookies or whatever it is, and suddenly they own the ranch,
mm-hmm.
the next thing we know, seriously, the border for Mexico is going to be somewhere around Kansas.
Yeah, either that or the U.S.
And we'll all have short hair.
Or the United States border is going to be somewhere down around El Salvador.
Well, that could happen as well.
Yeah, and there have
and
been
maybe
talks.
Maybe that's what the government is actually hoping.
Well, and that's what the CFR has been promoting. The CFR says that United States, Canada, and Mexico should basically just eliminate barriers to trade and the movement of people.
But it doesn't matter if your goal is to have the entire North American continent all one entity,
mm-hmm.
then it doesn't matter if the border, the Mexican border comes goes up or our border goes down. Because it's all the same people, so they're going to intermix.
There's a giant eraser that's being moved across the Rio Grande right now, and it's wiping out what used to remain of the border.
So pay close attention on Monday night to what he says.
Right. It is going to be an interesting night, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussion. Meanwhile, there's a story that we want to get into here that is really... Well, we touched on it last week, and the more you scratch at this, the more, you know, it's like one of those, you know, scratch and win things. I mean, the more you scratch, the more stuff, you know, you find underneath. There was a plane that was stopped and seized in Mexico in April in the Yucatan, and it was found to contain or be carrying 5.5 tons of cocaine in 128 identical black suitcases that were marked private. Now, how they figured out it was in there, I mean, you know, with the private signs on the side, I don't know, but somehow the Mexican authorities were tipped off to this.
Especially since this looked like a U.S. government plane.
Well, that's the thing. The plane was painted in the unique blue and white style of an official United States government aircraft. It was a DC-9. The logo on the side, which is Skyway Aircraft, looks like the logo for the Department of Homeland Security. Okay. But somehow the Mexican authorities were tipped off that this plane was coming in. It was surrounded by Mexican troops when the plane landed. And yet, somehow, the pilot of this plane managed to escape through the cordon of Mexican army and remains anonymous to this day. Nobody knows who he is. Now, I don't believe that the Mexican military is so incompetent that a guy could have just slipped off the plane and through without some assistance somewhere from somebody in authority. That's point number one to keep in mind. Now, most of the information that we're going to relate to you tonight about this case, we'll dub this plane Cocaine One, comes from the investigative journalist Daniel Hopsicker, who's got an excellent website called Mad Cow Productions, Mad Cow Morning News. That's madcowprod.com.
Yeah, it's a great site.
Yeah, and Wayne Madsen, who's former NSA and runs a website, which is just waynemadsenreport.com. It turns out that this plane was an asset of a company called Skyway Communications Holding, which is a firm that was essentially launched as a stock fraud scam, according to Hopsicker, which somehow burned through about $40 million in a couple of years. They contended that they were developing software that would not only protect aircraft in flight from terrorists, I'm not sure how software does that, but it would also deliver high-speed internet connections to people in flight. It's vaporware. It doesn't exist.
I was going to say, that's how could that work?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Skyway Communications, no products, no prospects, but it did happen to have an airplane painted to look like an official United States government plane.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as it turns out, there's not just one, but two, count them, two identical aircraft painted identically and apparently using the same tail numbers. So they have two DC-9s masquerading as government planes.
Sitting side by side.
Yes, sitting side by side.
And no one asks any questions.
At the airport, the international airport in St. Petersburg, Clearwater, right next to a Coast Guard installation.
A Coast Guard installation, and no one at the Coast Guard installation noticed the tail numbers
apparently
were the same?
Apparently not. Apparently they took no notice of these planes painted to look like government aircraft, which is really hard to imagine in the days after 9/11. So, Skyway Aircraft apparently was co-owner of this plane with a group called Royal Sons LLC. Royal Sons LLC and... Let's see if I can find my notes here.
Isn't Royal Sons located, aren't both those located at the same airport that...
Well, here's the thing. Royal Sons LLC was formerly housed in the same hangar at the Venice, Florida airport Huffman Aviation. Now, if that name rings a little bell, we'll just ring it a little louder. Huffman Aviation was owned by a gentleman named Rudy Deckers. And that was the location where Mohammed Atta learned to fly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we've got this added little bit of information. We've got an aircraft caught in Mexico with 5.5 tons of cocaine, making it one of the 10 largest drug busts in history, in an airplane co-owned by a company that just happened to share an address with the guys who taught Mohammed Atta to fly. The pilot of the plane conveniently slips through the ring of Mexican soldiers around the plane when it stopped. Now we add a new element. According to Daniel Hopsicker, in a story just published yesterday, a San Diego defense contractor, the Titan Corporation, is apparently connected to Skyway Communications. The Titan Corporation is already involved in scandals, including the torture of prisoners at Abu Ghraib, and conviction and fine for a $28 million fine, I should say, for fixing the presidential election in the African nation of Benin. So, the company just also happens to be the biggest campaign contributor to Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham.
Oh!
Of the Hookergate scandal.
Yes, indeed. So
yes.
That we're getting. Oh.
So, here's how this all pieces together. Titan Corporation was apparently putting out press releases touting the exciting new developments of the Skyway Communications Company that would be a boon to their investors, despite the fact that Skyway was on the verge of bankruptcy and had no product to sell. I mean, you know, it's like one of those internet.com busts of the 90s. Right, exactly. Yeah, we don't have a product, but we've got a great website.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Titan Corporation was basically selling the prospects of Skyway Communications prior to the company declaring bankruptcy. But, however, it did have the two DC-9s decked out to look like government aircraft. And this ties, of course, to Brent Wilkes, who is the Defense Department contractor who is now in hot water in Washington for throwing the now infamous poker parties. What does this have to do with what's going on in Florida and what's going on in Washington, D.C.? Well, the question that rises to the fore in our minds now, especially following the arrest, or well, not the arrest, but the notice today that the FBI was searching the domicile of the number three man at the CIA, former number three man, Dusty Fogo, who has been a friend of recently resigned CIA chief Porter Goss since high school.
Mm-hmm.
The district served by former Congressman Porter Goss happens to be immediately south of the Venice, Florida airport, which housed Huffman Aviation and Royal Sons LLC, co-owner of the DC-9 sitting in Mexico, which was apparently ferrying cocaine from Caracas, Venezuela, back to someplace in the United States.
Okay.
So, the question that is on our mind is, does the seizure of this aircraft in Mexico last month have anything at all to do,
mm-hmm.
with the scandals brewing in Washington, D.C., and the turf battles taking place inside the United States intelligence community?
Well, I'd say that's a really good possibility. And let me throw this in the mix as well. FAA records indicate that Skyway's office of record was 341 8th Avenue, as you say. Registration database also states that N391SA, the tail number of the plane,
mm-hmm.
has multiple records.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to its status as being exported to Venezuela and thus deregistered with the FAA, after the revelations about CIA rendition flights and proprietary companies, it was discovered that N168D was the tail number for a CASA CN-235-300 registered to Devon Holding and Leasing of Lexington, North Carolina.
Hmm.
The DC-9 seized by Mexico was previously owned by a partnership of Royal Sons and Skyway Communications Holding Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Skyway and Sons was founded in 2000 by Mr. Brent Kovar.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to read through this. Yeah, you were talking about the in-flight wireless. Let's see. House Majority Leader in 2000, Tom DeLay, appointed Kovar as Honorary Chairman of the Business Advisory Council of the National Republican Congressional Committee.
Right.
So he's tied in with DeLay.
Mm-hmm.
So far, we seem to have a connection to the rendition flights.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tom DeLay scandal.
And here's something else, courtesy of Wade Madsen. Skyway is also affiliated with an offshore company called DuPont Fund 57289 Incorporated, headed by a Richard DuPont Jr., who Madsen says probably does not exist. DuPont Fund is not connected with the DuPont Corporation or any subsidiaries of DuPont Corporation. DuPont Fund is headquartered in San Jose, Costa Rica, the same address used by Red Sea Management Limited, an offshore company and trust facilitator that is linked to an address in Belize City, Belize, which is apparently a post office box drop.
Ah.
Red Sea is based or has a subsidiary based in Cyprus called Dark Sea Consultants that specializes in online gambling operations in the Middle East and East Asia. Wayne Madsen's sources tell him that this operation, which involves cocaine smuggling and online gambling, is linked to the illegal operations of Jack Abramoff.
Yes, good old Jack.
Yes, who was connected to the group that bought Sun Cruise gambling casinos from Gus Bulos, who was, whacked is about the best way to describe it, shortly after selling to Abramoff and an investment group from Washington, D.C. Abramoff also connected to a group that wants to set up online gambling facilities in the South Pacific. These offshore gambling facilities, the Sun Cruise casino boats, because they are not on land, are apparently not governed by state of Florida regulations. So there is no way to tell how much money they take in, whether there's no one to complain to if you feel that the, say, the dice are weighted or anything like that. And essentially, it provides a ready source of cash for various and assorted business interests in Florida. So we see a web here, and we don't pretend to have all these dots connected, but we're throwing
out
some things.
In fact, I'll tell you what, I'm scanning down as Derek is speaking. I'm scanning down an article about it as well, because this article connects this in so – it's connected to a bank in England. It's connected to bin Laden. This is nasty.
Yeah, and it indicates a couple of things. Now, first of all, we need to point out that Porter Goss was nominated to lead the CIA possibly because of his experience back in the 1960s and 70s. He was an operative for the CIA, operating primarily in Latin America and South America. There is a picture that is on the cover of Daniel Hofsicker's book, Barry and the Boys. Barry being Barry Seal.
Right. That's a name that should be familiar to our listeners.
Exactly. He was a pilot who flew for the CIA and made apparently or allegedly a lot of runs of cocaine and other drugs from South America into Mena, Arkansas, as well as other flights. The picture on the cover of this book was taken at a nightclub in Mexico City sometime during the 1960s. And sitting to the immediate right of Barry Seal in this picture is Porter Goss.
Porter Goss. Well, I will say this with about the huge cocaine presence on that plane. Think back to Iran-Contra, folks. What was happening? Huge amounts of cocaine were coming into the United States via people like Barry Seal. If it's starting again, or at least if it's definitely going on again.
Or it's never stopped.
Or never stopped. What special ops is it funding?
Yeah. What are they using the money for? The whole deal behind Iran-Contra, and only part of that was ever really made public through the official channels, that money was being used to fund the anti-communist rebels in Central America. It was also being used to finance weapons deals in the Middle East. And as reporter Gary Webb of the San Jose Mercury News pointed out, it was through this process that crack cocaine began to flood into American cities, and the CIA was responsible for it. Now, Webb, you might recall, was suicided a year ago in December. The official coroner's report said it was suicide, but somehow he managed to shoot himself in the head twice. The CIA denied it. His editors denied the story, retracted the story, but then later the CIA's own internal investigation admitted, oh, yeah, we did. Yeah, we did that. Yeah.
Well, it's amazing they admit to anything, but I think at this point you're going to see an awful lot of dancing going on in D.C.
Absolutely. So anyway, that's our big question is, does this seizure, which took place about a month ago, have anything to do with what's happening now in D.C.? because, as we know, there is a turf war that is taking place for control of the intelligence agencies. Now, one of our sources has sent us a note about this and indicated that it was the opinion of many people inside the intelligence community that Porter Goss was simply the loser in a turf war, that he quit because the very first intelligence community directive issued by John Negroponte made it very clear that he was the man in terms of intelligence, and that he'd also eased Porter Goss out of the daily intelligence briefing with the president, which is something that the DCI had generally taken care of, traditionally taken care of.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that there are so many in the press who paint Negroponte as somebody who is just really a figurehead. I mean, he's busy picking out wallpaper patterns or something over there and drawing up little charts. But there are those on the inside, as you say, who are writing to us, contacting us, and telling us that Negroponte is a shark. And he is definitely in control. The only person who might be possibly opposing him at this point may be Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah, and Rumsfeld is a street fighter when it comes to playing the bureaucratic game inside. He's survived in a very tough environment for a long, long time. Say what you will about Donald Rumsfeld, he knows how to play the game on the inside. In fact, Henry Kissinger even once referred to him as a black belt in bureaucratic politics.
You know, I had to bring this up. I'm on the Fox News Alert mailing list. I'll send this to you if you want to get it. They sent this out today. I forwarded it on to Derek, and I asked if they had intentionally mistyped Fogo's name. The headline says, "Law enforcement officers search home of outgoing CIA number three, Kyle Dusty Fago."
Yeah, it makes you wonder.
A and O are nowhere near each other on the keyboard.
Yeah, so that's not likely that that was a typo. And the reason that that makes you laugh is not simply, you know, junior high humor, but it's because the poker parties, which are kind of at the center of this Hookergate scandal, are rumored, we say, to have involved prostitutes of the male variety rather than the female variety.
Or at the very least, both kinds.
Yeah. Now, there's no indication that Porter Goss himself was involved in any of that activity, although he apparently did go to play poker. But Dusty Fogo was apparently a regular at the poker games, and so the typographical error, will be charitable, was, shall we say, a slip of the Freudian type.
I think that was intentional. I really do. Well, you know, there's another story on WatcherMagazine.com that I think you need to pay attention to. It's from Debka File, great source. It's about the Iranian Revolutionary Guard infiltrating Sudan and the southern Negev, which is part of Israel.
Yeah, the Negev is the desert area. That's the southern point of Israel, borders
exactly.
on Egypt. Right.
Exactly. Now, the Negev would be across the Red Sea. Is it the Red Sea? Or the body of water, is it called the Red Sea at that point? Anyway, it was across a body of water from Sudan. But the question is, are they setting up for war with Egypt?
Well, that's a good question. Debka says their intelligence sources are indicating that this could be a move to threaten both Egypt and
Israel.
But it really is a little puzzling. They're running Sudanese into the southern Negev. And I don't know why that would be taking place, but I don't know enough about the politics and the economics of that region. Are there people who are routinely, you know, running from Sudan up to, you know, through Egypt, because they've got to go through Egypt to get there, or at least via water to the Negev? I don't know. I don't know. But Debka File identifies several local smuggling rings, a Palestinian gang, one run by the new Hamas government, and one that is apparently a cooperative arrangement between crime organizations in Egypt and Sudan. So, and Al-Qaeda, I should say, like a sort of like a triumvirate there. And Iranian intelligence officers are apparently masterminding it and using it to bring Revolutionary Guard members into Iran, or rather into Israel. The only thing I can figure is that they're trying to set something up as a, you know, to have something ready in case we do decide to attack. Like, you heard us, we've already got agents in place in Israel.
I think that's entirely possible. I do know that Mubarak is having a lot of trouble in Egypt. There are a lot of, we've seen bombings take place there several times over the last year. And these insurgents want Mubarak out.
They don't. Yeah, and Mubarak is trying to keep control as long as he can. He's not a spring chicken anymore. He's been president of Egypt for a long time.
Long time.
And so it is. Boy, it's a shadowy world. I mean, as twisted as American intelligence gets, and the games that our government is playing, the various factions at work over there. I mean, there are public postures and then, you know, arrangements behind the scenes between people who aren't supposed to be talking to one another. And, you know, again, with it all having such heavy implications for prophecy, it's interesting.
I know. You know, speaking of prophecy, another story that's on the front page today at WatcherMagazine.com. By the way, if you want to subscribe to that, you can just send us a note at subscribe@WatcherMagazine.com. Mm-hmm. We'll add you to the list. There's a drought in China that is threatening the drinking water for 14 million people. And what I find really interesting about this story is this is in the area where Beijing is. Beijing is going to be hosting the 2008 Olympics.
Mm, right.
So they're building all kinds of venues. They're going crazy, as any town does, when mm-hmm. they're getting ready to host the Olympics. And a lot of the water is being used by the sites that are going to be the Olympic venues.
Mm.
In other words, they're not going to the people who need it. They're going to make Beijing look really modern and cool.
Mm-hmm. And it makes you wonder then, what do they do? You know, what do they do to keep people happy there? Well, like most governments, they find an external enemy and, you know, point fingers in that direction.
Oh, exactly. And it isn't just drinking water. I mean, you have to have water to raise your crops and mm-hmm. feed your livestock.
Sure. And, yeah.
They've suffered through so many things. I think that it's easy for Americans to forget about, you know, when we think avian flu, we think, oh, well, big deal. Not that many humans have died from it. You know, 120 people, something like that. Think of all of the livestock, all of the chickens and
right.
ducks and geese who have been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just this, you know, I mean, it's sad that these animals have been killed, but think of the farmers who've lost that livelihood. Imagine if you are a farmer and you have 1,000 chickens and they're laying eggs and that's your livelihood, and someone comes in and says, oh, I've got a chicken here who might be sick. Got to kill them all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there goes your livelihood. Oh, mm-hmm. yeah, we'll pay you back someday.
Yeah.
There's another story I wanted to get to regarding secret back channel government connections to people we shouldn't be doing business with. We talked about this the other night, the 200,000 AK-47s that just sort of disappeared.
Yeah, yeah.
On their way into Iraq.
What's the story on that?
Well, this is these are weapons that were being shipped from Bosnia in 2004 and 2005. At least this is the story, to be used by Iraqi security forces. The government, United States government, had secured these weapons, these AK-47s, and contracted out to a gentleman named Victor Bout to move the assault rifles from Bosnia to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Victor Bout, that's Victor with a K, is a Russian who is probably the world's leading arms merchant. He's the guy you talk to when you need to buy a couple hundred thousand AK-47s. The story, though, is that in March of 2005, over a year ago, the State Department, no, I take this back, actually in the spring of 2004, the State Department sent a note around to the rest of the government, said, stop doing business with this guy because he's got connections to the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. He's supplying weapons to the people we're supposed to be fighting. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
However, it was 5 months for the Defense Department even to respond to the Department of State, okay? And by March of 2005, 9 months after they received a notice from the State Department, they were still using Victor Bout to fly weapons from place to place.
They being
the Department of Defense, the United States Department of Defense. Now, this is despite the fact that Bout was tied to dictators like Charles Taylor in Liberia, who sold diamonds to Al-Qaeda to help finance Al-Qaeda operations. He was supplying weapons to rebels in the Congo and Angola, to the FARC rebels in Colombia, who financed their operations by producing and shipping cocaine, probably through the CIA, and to other rebels like Abu Sayyaf in the Philippines. So, even though Bout was connected to all of these unsavory characters, the United States Department of Defense thought that he was the best guy to handle the transfer of these 200,000 AK-47s to Iraqi security forces who would then be trained by United States military. The planes seem to have disappeared. They have fallen off the map, off the radar, and vanished. Four plane loads of assault rifles are missing and have been missing since the spring of 2005. The story was just printed, the story was just published a couple of days ago by the Mirror in the UK. It is unbelievable that the United States Department of Defense was doing business with this guy in the first place.
Now, honey, surely you jest when you say that.
No, I don't mean literally unbelievable. Let me rephrase that. Let me come in again. It is unconscionable.
Yes, it is
unconscionable. That we are doing business with a man like Victor Bout. I mean, this guy is so bad that even the United Nations has labeled him a bad guy.
No.
even the UN. What's even more alarming is that these weapons may well wind up in the hands of people who will aim them at the young men and women that American parents have sent overseas to promote democracy, to promote freedom. In other words, those missing weapons may be responsible for some of those flag-draped coffins flying back into the United States.
Well, I hate to say this, but that's not new. I mean, it's hideous, but that's not new. After all, I think there's pretty good evidence that the United States helped set up Osama bin Laden in the first place.
Right. Mm-hmm.
To fight against the Russians, ostensibly. And we helped him out, helped out Afghanistan to win against the Russian invasion, so to speak, and armed them and trained them. And then when we invaded, when we went into Afghanistan
to liberate them. Yeah.
Those same weapons and that training
was used against our boys
exactly.
and girls. Now, as parents of a daughter who is rapidly approaching the age where if a draft were instituted here, she might be called to serve. You know, this story hits home a little bit harder. And I know that we do have men and women in the military who listen to this podcast, and we say God bless you and God protect you.
Absolutely.
Because we... As we mentioned many times before, we have a family going back generations that have served in the defense of this country. But God save us from the men in the suits who conduct back channel deals like this that wind up killing the men and women who go and volunteer to serve.
You know, you and I talk a lot about the humans involved. And maybe we need to reiterate that we believe that there's a spiritual component behind the evil that humans do.
Right.
Humans do have free will. We are capable of doing evil without a supernatural influence. But there is a supernatural battle going on. And a lot of these humans at the top are involved in it because they are they're convinced by these supernatural entities that it's in their best interest to do it. In other words, this goes way back, as we've talked with many of our guests. This goes back to the old Babylon, the old Nimrod idea of buying your way into godship by serving these entities.
Ye shall be as gods. And the idea that power over others needs to be consolidated, that we need to be somehow consolidated under the rule of one single entity.
That's right.
And as we're slowly learning, there are strains in other belief systems. We're not talking just about a Christian worldview here, but there are prophecies in other religions that call for a one-world government set up under a Buddhocracy or a one-world under Islam, Sharia law. So to us, that just indicates that there are struggles going on within the ranks of the fallen for control over one another.
Well, you know, as we have learned from various interviews in the last year, when it lists the Table of Nations, it lists 70 nations.
Right.
And there were 70 or 72, depending on how you translate it. But apparently God put the fallen angels in charge of the countries.
Mm-hmm.
And when we read about that Prince of Persia, was one of them.
Yes, we're in the book of Daniel, we're talking about a literal being, a literal angel who wrestled with the archangel Michael for, you know, to try to prevent a message being delivered to the prophet Daniel. So, yes, that is something to keep in mind as we talk about these human agents and the actions and decisions and choices being made here in the physical realm. We need to consider that these are the shadows of the real struggles being fought in the heavenlies, in the spiritual realm. There's a story that I wanted to get to because this is a parallel of something that we've talked about recently. We talked about and been following the case of Susan Lindauer. She, by the way, had the preliminary round of her hearing to determine whether she's competent to stand trial in New York. And it appears now that her attorney, she was able to get an attorney besides the court-appointed
lawyer. Praise the Lord.
Yeah. And that some evidence was presented on her behalf that indicates that the diagnosis of the doctors from Carswell, which is the federal mental institution in Fort Worth, Texas, was what they call a wastebasket diagnosis. In other words, it's the one that you come up with when you can't figure out what's really wrong. Susan Lindauer was essentially diagnosed as being psychotic, not otherwise specified.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And on the basis of that, they want to medicate her against her will. Well, the hearing has been continued until June 2nd. So, but it appears that things are beginning to move maybe more in her direction. And I'll post another link to Jay Field's blog because he's really got the details on what's happening there and what the specifics are. And they are looking for some assistance in terms of legal expenses to try to get her some representation. But there's another story, and I was tipped off to this by an email from investigative journalist Janet Phelan, which seems to mirror Susan Lindauer's story. And this is a case from Cleveland, Ohio. And you get the sense after reading this that America must be under siege by crazy, in quoting marks, crazy women. A woman by the name of Carol Fisher, who works at the local communist bookstore there, a place called Revolution Books, was arrested by police in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, for stapling anti-Bush posters on telephone poles.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently that's against local ordinance or something. But Ms. Fisher, who's, you know, 5'4", 130 pounds, 53 years old, not exactly, you know, an imposing physical specimen,
mm-hmm.
was denied the opportunity to remove the offending posters by the arresting officers, who tackled her, threw her to the ground, face down, handcuffed her, took her off to court. And she has been found guilty in that case, although those who were in attendance at the trial said that the judge did not instruct the jury as to what was proper procedure when you're arresting someone for a minor misdemeanor, like mm-hmm. putting up a poster, you know, mm-hmm. a Xerox piece of paper.
A fine and that's it.
A fine and that's it. Well, prior to this, this is what really gets weird. I mean, that's bad enough. But prior to the sentencing, Judge McGinty, the presiding judge in the case, decided that he wanted Ms. Fisher to have a psychiatric evaluation because apparently she showed up in court wearing a T-shirt that had an anti-Bush slogan on it. This, to Judge McGinty, was evidence of her mental illness.
Oh, my goodness.
The word he used was delusional.
Because she had an anti-Bush slogan on?
Yes, yes. According to the story, from the very start of Carol's case, I'm quoting now, the judge has openly said that she must have mental problems for resisting an unlawful and brutal encounter with Cleveland Heights police. He went even further in yesterday's hearing, and this was from a story published Wednesday, so this took place Tuesday. He went even further in yesterday's hearing saying that her opposition to the Bush regime makes her delusional, end quote. So based on that, the judge wanted her to undergo psychiatric testing, which might conceivably result in a diagnosis that would lead to her being medicated or drugged against her will.
So, do you think the Founding Fathers were delusional?
Could be. I don't know.
They were probably wearing anti-King George shirts.
Probably. Yeah. I think I saw a poster like that once.
Yeah.
Well, if there is any good news,
she's entitled to her opinion.
She is entitled to her opinion, and the mere fact that you disagree with the president, with in office does not make you delusional. I mean, that's just stupid.
I just wonder if she'd been putting up, say, abortion or anti, I don't know, animal rights, you know, any other kind of poster, mm-hmm. or lost dog. I mean, anything
right.
else.
It makes you wonder.
Would they have come up and tackled her? Or would they have just said, ma'am, you're not supposed to staple posters to that pole?
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't agree with Carol Fisher's politics. I think communists are cut from the same cloth as fascists.
Yeah,
it's just that
exactly.
They
I don't either. But
they don't want to admit
she's
it.
She's got a right to
but
her
she's got a right to
country.
Express her opinion in this country. At least I thought so. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a late development last night. Apparently, she was released. The information that I found about her case did not have any more information than that. So maybe somebody whispered to Judge McGinty and said, you know, Judge, this is maybe going a little far. So I hope that that's the case. But this story, again, just seems to parallel the case of Susan Lindauer. Susan Lindauer, who apparently made some statements that could be embarrassing to the administration, not just about the way they handled the Iraq invasion, mm-hmm. But about the testimony that she gave, a deposition that she gave in the Lockerbie case, the case of the Pan Am flight that was blown up over Lockerbie, Scotland,
right.
in which she said, hey, I know an intelligence guy who told me that it was Syria that blew it up, not Libya.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't blame Syria because the Syrians who blew it up were running drugs with the CIA, which apparently stands for...
It takes us back to Fogo and his bunch.
Yeah, which apparently the CIA stands for Cocaine Importation Agency. So that's not information that you want to get out. So what do? They charge her with something and then they say, hey, we think you're crazy. They get a court-appointed doctor or two to agree with the judge's opinion, send her off to an institution in which you're – well, anyway, we've gone through that story before.
Well, if any of you listening out there, you wonderful people, if any of you live in the Cleveland Heights area, please let us know if you know more about this story than we do. And if you do, you know, write to us and let us know whom we might contact because we'd like to have somebody on the show about it.
Yes. And by the way, if you live in California, we would like to wish you, as we go into this weekend, a happy
Parents' Day,
Female Legal Guardians Day this weekend.
Gosh, I know. No mom, no dad. It's just, it is so ate up, this world that we're living in.
The California state legislature has lost its collective mind. A couple of weeks ago, they voted for a resolution that said that the Labor Day, or the May Day immigrant walkout was mm-hmm. a good thing, and we totally support it. Now they passed passed legislation, or they're on the verge of passing legislation that will remove sex-specific terms like mom and dad mm-hmm. from students' textbooks. We don't want anyone of alternate lifestyle to feel bad.
Let me say this. And not all of our listeners may agree with me on this. We really need to pray for California. No, seriously,
amen.
We really, really do. Now, I want you to think back to a story in the Old Testament where God strolled down and visited Abraham and said, I'm going to go take out a city. Because
mm-hmm.
Sodom and Gomorrah are a stench in my nostrils, and mm-hmm. I'm taking them out. He didn't say, I've got a nephew living in one of those cities. Could you get him out first?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
He said, well, actually, what he did was bargain. And I could go through the whole thing, but he bargained for the lives of everyone.
That's true.
In those cities.
If you find even 10 righteous men, will you spare the city?
Yep.
Yeah, so he did. He got down and he prayed. And I think that's an excellent example to remember because a lot of times it's very easy for us, and I include myself in that collective us, to somehow think while I'm standing on my high horse or on my soapbox, while I'm busy mixing my metaphors, to believe that my sins are somehow less offensive to God than those elsewhere. So prayer is the correct answer. We keep somehow forgetting as Christians, I think, that our weapon in this battle is the sword of God's word, not the sledgehammer of self-righteousness.
You know, that's a really good way to put it, honey. And you know, I'm right there, too. It angers me. And I am really angry that there is such a hideous, stinky, frankly, in God's nostrils, tendency to lean toward homosexuality in this country. That's the kindest way I know how to put that. Mm-hmm. But we have to remember that even though we disagree, you and I vehemently disagree with homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of things we do and we have done that are also stinky in God's nostrils.
Right.
And because of that, we got to pray for the people.
Right. And to remember that God doesn't grade on a curve.
No, he doesn't.
You know, it's pass fail, and all of us have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God according to Scripture. So there is no right, none righteous, no, not one.
That is right.
On the basis of our own works. So that is a good reminder. And,
you know, and Jesus was such an amazing example. I mean, he was hanging out with the dregs of society.
He, yeah, did. It was probably not the kind of traveling preacher that most of the the very righteous of his day.
I know, going and preaching in the town and then staying with the nicest family in the church or at the nicest hotel. No, he would have gone and preached to the streets, the homeless, and then, you know, slept overnight in a bar or something.
Yeah. Well, we do need to congratulate somebody. We got an email today. We got somebody who finally managed to wend through all of those sneakily buried sound clips, the way I mixed those into the music there so you could barely hear them.
I know. Yeah. And that was, in fact, I told you, I said, even I, and I have really good speakers on my laptop, mm-hmm. I said, even I had trouble discerning those. I didn't know what they were, but still.
But you had an advantage there. Nancy, and I'm probably not going to pronounce your last name correctly, so I won't try, but Nancy S. got it right. And so in case you've been wondering and it's been driving you crazy, here are the clips that were used in the opening theme for PID Radio. Now, of course, the opening clip, the one starts before the music, doesn't count, but she did correctly get it, which was really surprising. She got the Hellboy quote that I used from last night, which is really amazing. I thought for sure no one that listens to us will get
Nancy,
this from Hellboy.
Our kind of gal.
But she even gave names and dates here on some of these. George W. Bush was the first quote, of course, where he said, catapult the propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
That was from May of 2005. David Duchovny as Fox Mulder, saying the truth is out there. But the catch was that was not taken from an episode of The X-Files. That was actually taken from the episode of The Simpsons that
featured.
Which
was my big hint last night.
Yeah, because it was featured, you know, characters from one Fox show who appeared on another Fox show.
Uh-huh.
It was from The X-Files episode, or where the agents Scully and Mulder showed up on in Springfield to investigate the extraterrestrials. Then, of course, Ronald Reagan saying alien life form come down and threaten us. That was from 1985. And she got the quote from Men in Black, Tommy Lee Jones, saying a highly secret but well-funded government agency. Lawrence Fishburne from the movie The Matrix,
mm-hmm.
as the character. Why am I gapping on this? That's my not Neo. That was the other guy. Morpheus.
Oh, yes.
Morpheus was the name of his character. And then Dwight D. Eisenhower, his farewell address.
The very famous speech.
Yes. And then finally, George W. Bush again, and talking about how his job would be so much easier if it were
a dictatorship.
So, Nancy S., congratulations. We'll send you an email, get your address, and send off a copy of Iron Dragons.
That's fabulous. Congratulations. And thank you to everybody who sent in your guesswork,
because mm-hmm.
I know it was difficult to discern, but that was the whole point.
Yeah. Didn't want them to drown out the music there. Just kind of wanted to mix them in almost like it's subliminal. See, we operate on several levels here in this program. Subliminal, liminal, and superliminal.
That's right. And super crispy creamial.
Starting Monday, we'll pick up again with our interviews for our prophecy series. Tom Horn, editor of Raiders News Update, author of The Ahriman Gate, will talk about the days of Noah and how they relate to the times that are coming.
Well, you know what? That's quite a topic. That's going to be a great show.
Yeah, and then we'll go right from that into the interview with Beth Vey, who will talk about Stargates, the entrance to the abyss, and Nibiru. Is it Planet X, or is it a place here on Earth? And what would Wormwood be then?
Ooh.
Yeah.
You know, we have met some amazing people, and I praise God for it through all of these. And that includes our listeners. In fact, I just want to say a thank you to everybody who listens to our show. And I just want to say this. We get some wonderful emails.
Mm-hmm.
But lately, It's come to my attention that we may not be getting all of them.
Yeah, there are a couple people who've sent us notes recently and asked, you know, why didn't you respond? In all honesty.
And we do. When we get an email, we respond usually within the first few moments that we get it is when I try to do it. But almost always within the first day or two after we get it.
Mm-hmm.
Derek sits every evening after he uploads the show, and he sits and he writes answers to emails, and then I do it during the day. If you have sent us an email and we have not responded, you know, if it's one that definitely requires a response,
mm-hmm.
sometimes we get emails and they go, rock on or right on or something like that.
Or you stink.
Yeah, we get those too. But seriously, if you've sent us an email and you have been wondering why have they not responded, please resend it. Because we don't know if it's hanging up at the server or what's going on, but we are apparently missing some emails, and you got some emails that were old, and they arrived just a few days ago.
Really weird. I mean, we're talking months old, going back several months. And some of them were things that I'd seen before, so I was just able to delete them. But some of them were new to me, and that was really weird, almost as though they'd been intercepted.
And just, you know, sort of stored for a while and then sent along to us so they know.
And, you know, I could tell when I read them that they'd been steamed open.
No.
Yeah.
Oh. And paw prints all over it. And little sugar crystals. And sprinkles. Well, I think that's enough. We blathered on and on. You know what? We've missed doing this since we started the prophecy series. We're considering changing our format slightly to have more days where we do this.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we're even talking about the possibility of having a separate show.
Mm-hmm.
A separate show that is just interviews. And then a weekly show that is just us. If you think that would be a good idea, let us know. If you think that's a stupid idea.
We appreciate your input, yes.
That's right.
Let us know.
Let us know, but send donuts. That softens the blow. Well, folks, I think that's enough for today.
Yep. We'll be back Monday with Tom Horn. And as always, our email address for your comments and questions is radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And you can always join us at the forum, peeringintodarkness.com/forum. It's free to sign up. It's free to post. And it's a free-for-all.
And funny things always happen on the way there. Until Monday, I'm Derek Gilbert.
Oh, I'm whining and groaning, Gilbert. We'll talk to you on Monday, everybody. Bye-bye. Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear, a better day.